The Financial Times guides you through complex issues. In divisive times, don't settle for black and white. When you need the full perspective, turn to FT.com. Become a subscriber today. Search for FT subscription.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome to the podcast, episode 938. It's the 1st of December 2017. On the podcast today, I have Neil Rickett, CEO of Vesarion VRS, and Neil discusses their interim results and about other developments happening in the world of graphene. Also on the podcast, Paul Vonk, Managing Director of Angus Energy, gives an update on their recent operations. Plus, Stephen Chong, COO of MySquare, it's MYSQ, provides an update and talks through his strategy. I also have Russ Mould, Investment Director at stockbroker AJ Bell, talking about the following stocks: Ramsden's, Marlowe, James Latham, and Alumask. Plus, as always, I have the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Neil Rickett, CEO of Vesarion. That's VRS ticker. Neil, thanks for joining me again.
Good morning, Justin. It's a pleasure to talk to you actually in this country. So we're aligned with our time zone. So it's a double bonus for me.
Yeah, but I don't know if it's in this weather. I don't know if it's nice to be in this country. You know, I'm going on holiday soon to a warm climate, so I'm looking forward to that. But at the moment, it's a little too cold. I don't know what graphene can do to help that, Neil. But I'm sure it can do something. It's not a lot it can't do. But first and foremost, go on.
The answer may not be in graphene for cooling systems. So we've been doing some really exceptional work with its sister product, which we haven't officially launched yet, which is the boron nitride, which we supplied to the CPI, and that's actually going into cooling systems. So I might be able to help yet, Justin.
Yeah, what is it? So in fact, we'll get into that in a bit. For people listening right now, so they've just tuned in, never listened to the podcast before, had a recommendation, and they don't know anything about Vesarion, explain what the company's all about, please, Anil.
So Vesarion is a materials development company. I started in 2011, and we're pushing the very scientific boundaries with some of these new technologies, including graphene, and as I mentioned a minute ago, some of the other two-dimensional materials.
Yes, and I think the public has caught on. I mean, it's helped by some of your releases, but I think the investing public has caught on to the potential here at Vesarion. And if you look around, I mean, you know, all these experts are saying graphene has the potential to change so many sectors, you know, immeasurably. You've been signing some collaborations. I mean, the last one with a global consumer group. And the share price has done over like 400%, I think, rise in the last month and a bit. And so it's come back a bit, but it's now, as we talk today, rallying again. It's at 45 pence. I think it's been about 50-odd pence, sitting due to a market cap of over 50 million. So it's very exciting. Your company is very exciting, very well followed on Vox. And but let's go through some of the highlights, Neil, from the interims. So these are interim statements for the last 6 months, aren't they? Up to
the end of September.
Take us through some of the highlights, if you could, Neil.
Yeah, sure. So I always think that reporting our figures is like your report card at school, and this one would be good. The parents would be very happy. So sales are up 167%, quite staggering performance from our group companies. We've managed to halve the losses, which means that the effect on the amount of cash that we need is dramatically reduced, and that is continuing. We've got operational and efficiency drives in all of our businesses. We're starting to see a recovery in the oil and gas industry, and generally the underlying performance from all the groups is really good. But then you couple that with three staggering announcements, you know, transformational announcements in the last month or so. Mm-hmm. The first with the Centre for Process Innovation, one of the government's catapult centres, where we won 4 out of 4 tenders for these new materials. The collaboration agreement with the Israeli aerospace industry, who are a very secretive organization. They do a lot of military work as well as civil work. It's very unusual in my experience to be able to name some of these large organizations. And the third one is, again, a transformational change with this large consumer goods manufacturer who are looking for graphene in their packaging. The scale and the opportunity there is simply staggering.
Yeah, and also you're saying there's chances of some more collaborations happening in the not too distant future. And obviously, it's hard to put a timing on these kind of things, because when you've got a couple of people, you know, looking at contracts and big companies looking at contracts, it takes longer than you think. But When you say in not too distant future, what are you talking here? When would you hope to get these announced, these kind of collaborations, or the next one?
I think in this world of social media, it's always difficult to put timelines on without without attracting unwelcome attention. But I stand by my comments that I made in one of the previous RNSs, which we have a number of these collaborations underway, and the timing of them is imminent. So I think you can read into that what you want to read, Justin. Yeah. I'm sat in my car today. All I can tell our shareholders is that the sun is very much shining.
Yeah, excellent stuff. Well, listen, I've talked to companies that, like I say, sometimes the ball is not in your court when it comes to signing on the dotted line with a big company. And I've talked to companies, who said that a deal is going to happen within the next week or so, and it's taken them about 9 months. So you never can tell. I'm not going to say that's happening with you, but that's the way, that's the nature of the beast, isn't it, when you're dealing with a big, complex company. But what would you say to people? I know what I'd say. If someone said to you, well, hang on, Neil, you know, you've... Yes, your group revenues have increased by 167% to 4.38 million, but you're still making a loss, and the company is now valued at about 60 million market cap. What would you say to people that says, I think you're overvalued? What would you say?
I think we're a bargain, and you have to understand I'm the largest shareholder, and we're not valuing this on a conventional set of numbers, although the numbers are very good. What we're, you know, our losses are probably a tenth of what our competitors are doing to achieve less progress. Mm-hmm. And what we're seeing, and that's on the international scale, and what we're seeing here is people are buying into the opportunity. If graphene is as good as we think it is and as good as it's demonstrating in laboratories and testing and academic, then this material will significantly impact society. You're talking about changing everything that we do and touch on a day-to-day basis, whether it's packaging and it's food or it's automotive, aerospace. Literally everything we do could be altered by this material. Mm-hmm. Now, the advantage for our shareholders is that we're the only business which has an active and shareholder relationship with the University of Manchester, where this was first isolated, and the University of Cambridge. And we have about £1 billion worth of assets around us, provided by either Europe or the government, to be able to drive this technology forward. And you know, if you couple that with the fact that people are becoming aware of the standards that are necessary, especially ISO, but other organizations as well, our material, we've done some in the RNS, it quite clearly says, we've done all our internal checks. We're waiting for people like the National Physics Laboratory that we work with to come up with their best practice guide, which they did a couple of weeks ago, and then we can get our material certified. And we are internally absolutely 100% confident that our material meets the standard. Mm-hmm. And that puts us in a very unique position, and that is why some of the largest companies in the world are beating their door down to a little factory in Cheltenham. Yeah. Because we have something which is not readily available, is not able to be produced in very high numbers at the moment, but we're making huge amounts of progress, and works and has independent data about how it works. It's not a hard sell at all. I was telling you earlier that I'm a little bit tired because I was working late at the engineers, the Engineering Employers Federation annual dinner last night, and I picked up another load of inquiries from customers who are really interested, including one company that has 89,000 employees. I was simply staggered at that. Wow. And the reason that it's such an easy sell is because we have all of this data that we've taken 2 years to find. During that period, the share price was relatively low because we couldn't say anything. And now that we've been able to open the doors to the types of collaborations that have been going on or been in progress for a while, we're able to see the share price respond. And I think this is only the start.
Yeah, well, do you know what? About 3 years ago, I moved down the market cap scale to investing in smaller cap companies. And before that, I would very much look at, profit and on a PE terms and, traditional valuation metrics. And I understand there's different investors. And while the small cap space is more volatile, if you do research, you have the potential, like I have, to do a lot better at investing than I did with the bigger caps. And I've often said to people on social media, I said, listen, if you only go for companies and value them on traditional valuation metrics, you'd only get traditional returns, and that's it. And I said, you've got to look at something like Vasaren, for example, and there was a VR company a while back that just rocketed. And when you think of it, and people thought VR's going to be massive. Not compared to where you are, You know, that's a niche. I mean, virtual reality, I don't know that many people with the virtual reality headsets, but I mean, you know, it's a niche compared to the graphene market, isn't it? The graphene market is all-encompassing. It can change so many different areas. And like I said, if I'd stuck to sort of, you know, balance sheets and profit and all this, I would never, ever have discovered you, and I'm glad I have, because, and other companies like, you know, so it's just, people have to understand that the potential here to change is massive, isn't it?
I mean, we've got a lot of work to do. There's no doubt about that, and we're working really, really hard. Our guys have been in Europe this week. They've produced the first batches off the 10x scale up material. We don't hang around. You know, we raised that money a couple of weeks ago, and here we are producing, you know, kilo batches for testing and evaluation on the new kit that we said to the shareholders we would buy. Mm. And you know, that equipment is in manufacture. In the meantime, we're using the sister equipment to be able to demonstrate and to optimize our production, so that as soon as that equipment lands in Cheltenham, we're gonna be straight into producing. Now, we don't know when orders are going to pop up, and sometimes they take you by surprise, and sometimes they can be a little bit longer, because these organizations they're oil tankers. You know, they take a long time to turn around from what they've conventionally been doing. But I can tell you that you know, we're seeing huge amounts of progress in a very short period of time, as demonstrated by the three collaborations and announcements we've made in the last month or so.
Yeah, exactly. And so, as far as it's at the moment, you know, graphene still very much in its infancy, the sector. And it just takes time, I suppose. But so what's holding back? I mean, because everyone's been saying it can change from airlines to, you know, purification of water, water filtering, to anything pretty much, you know, conductivity. So what's holding it? Is it just being able to produce high quality in a sort of a certain amount of, you know, quantity?
So the challenge for anybody that's in the sector is to produce very high quality material, as you said. It's to be able to produce it in reasonable volume. So I've already explained that, you know, the next stage for us is to go from sub-gram to tens of grams to hundreds of grams, and now to kilos, which is what we're doing. Mm. And after that, you know, we're into tens of kilos, hundreds of kilos and tons.
Yeah.
And we've got our sights firmly set on that challenge, and the team are, you know, they're looking at the second and third stages already. And the third thing is to be very cost-effective. So you can produce material which is fantastic, but never commercially viable. And what we've been able to do with these large companies, especially that consumer group, is to be able to demonstrate that in volume we can actually make this work. Mm. And that's what's piqued everybody's interest. So there hasn't been the availability of high-quality material in big enough quantities via a commercially mass-produced route, and that's what we've cracked, and that is what makes this business so special, and that is what makes my job as a CEO and as one of the largest shareholders so exciting.
Yeah, and what's nice is there is that, you know, once you do crack it with a big company like the one you mentioned there, and it gives them a distinct advantage in some area, then of course other companies will come battering your door down, won't they? You know.
Well, this is, you know, this is the situation. Is once you start announcing these collaborations, I was very lucky to go to an award ceremony on Wednesday night. You know, I lead a very privileged life, and I was giving a prize to for innovation. Incidentally, the whole thing was sponsored by Amazon. And they did a great job. The organisers were Caspian Media, and the guy who runs it came up to me and he said, "Neil," he said, "who'd have thought 3 years ago when he gave you that prize that everybody in the city, all the analysts and all the pundits would be talking about Viserion?" And he said, I was simply staggered that we'd got in there and we'd given you a prize in the early days and now everybody's talking about you. Yeah. And that's what happens once you start announcing these collaborations. If you're in the packaging field and you know that one of your competitors is operating in this field, you suddenly go, do you know what? We don't want to take our time here. We want to get on with this. And that's why we've suddenly got a huge amount of interest. And that will only get better. The more that we are established, the more that that our graphene derivative nanine, and I'm going to charge you a pound every time you say graphene now, not nanine.
So yes,
is so different to what is available on the market, and is now, that you know, being considered as the solution for a lot of these challenges in this particular field.
Yeah, marvellous stuff. Oh, Neil, it's always good to chat to you, and listen, thanks for taking the time, because like I said, you are very busy at the moment, but you know, if someone's listening to this and they're on the edge or the cusp of being convinced they should follow the story, but are not yet, give them three reasons why they should hit that follow button on your page, please, on Vox Markets.
I always hate doing this, Justin, but the three reasons I think is that we've successfully demonstrated now through these collaborations that that we're moving in the right direction, that we're providing traction. I think it's really, really important that our connections and contacts are almost unrivaled with the University of Manchester, the University of Cambridge and the UK government. And the third thing, probably more than anything, is that we are able now to demonstrate that we can meet this new ISO standard, which means that the competition has effectively been reduced significantly, if not eradicated.
Yeah, and don't forget, you are the biggest shareholder. So, you know, when we see that share price go up by 50 pence there, and you've got 11.7% of the company. So, you know, you're aligned with other shareholders, but you're also starting to do very well now. Your worth is going up, isn't it?
I'm not particularly interested in the value of my shares. What I'm interested in is the value of other shareholders' shares, because they've supported us in this journey. And, you know, what my aim is to build a significant global company that everybody recognises and makes these changes to society. That's what's really, really important to me.
Yeah, but is it sort of, just one last thing, what's it like? The thing is, you are the CEO, you hold, you know, a chunk of shares there, but you can't really sell, can you? I mean, otherwise people say, why is he selling? So it's nice to have that value going up and everything. I mean, I guess you're never going to sell them, are you?
No, and you know, it's nice, and it provides comfort and security. And you know, one of the issues that AIM has is, as soon as the founder starts to sell, everybody gets a little bit worried. But actually, yeah, you know, we've got employees who have done really, really well. They've been with us. They've put their absolute life and soul into the business, and they've been awarded share options. And it's, you know, in some instances, you know, that's a really good perk for them, and they should benefit from that. And yeah, these guys have worked really soullessly in order to generate shareholder value, and we've been able to demonstrate that since we IPO'd in 2013, yeah, what's that left? You know, 4 years ago, that the value of the business has increased significantly. A lot of people have made a lot of money, which is what it's all about. Yeah. And we've gone on to build a really successful business. And you know, these sets of numbers, as I said previously, highlight that we can run a successful business. We know what we're doing. We've got profitable businesses within the group. We're generating revenue. And more importantly for me as the CEO is we're smashing our expectations, and that's really important.
Yeah, yeah. I think it's fine, you know, CEO selling stock, as long as in the RNS they've got a good reason why. And maybe if they're buying a house, show the picture of the house. I bought some stocks, I bought a new house, this is the picture of it, and that's fine. But when they explain it, that's fine. But Neil, listen, I completely understand you're really motivated by this. In fact, from the last podcast, a lot of people said it's nice to hear someone who's so enthusiastic about the business and their heart is in it. And that's, I think, convinced a lot of people to put you on their watch list. So it's always nice to hear. Neil, good to chat to you. And like you say, the news could land anytime. So hopefully we'll speak again in the not too distant future. Thanks very much.
Not a problem. Thanks, Justin.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Paul Bonk, Managing Director of Angus Energy. The ticker there is ANGS. Paul, thanks for coming on the podcast.
Well, thanks for having us again, Justin. Thank you.
Yeah, you've had lots of news. You've been busy there. Lots of busy. So we've got quite a few questions for you. Before we get into that, you know, for people not aware of Angus Energy or new to the podcast, can you give a brief summary as to what you're all about, please?
Well, Angus Energy is a UK-focused conventional oil and gas producer. We are in the prime position of opening up the Weald Basin in southern England.
Excellent stuff. All right, so around about 10 days ago now, you announced your initial flow rates from the Lidsey oil field. Clearly, you know, didn't meet market expectations. Why were your initial rates quite low there?
Well, Justin, you're completely correct. As you said, we announced our initial flow rates. This is an important distinction, you know. We have a legal requirement to report our initial flows, but these are definitely not our final flow rates. Now, naturally, we were disappointed, but we're also quite realistic. This is the oil and gas business. It's still premature to diagnose the exact cause, but there's several factors which can be remedied, and, you know, we're looking into right now. So, to summarize, you know, to start, when we switched it on, the initial pump did not work. And even though we've got very good downhole pressure, you know, in excess of 760 PSI, and with the new pump, we are producing dry oil, no water. However, at these rates, it should produce a lot more than it currently is doing. So we think that there's a hole in the tubing below the pump. So as soon as the fluid level drops below a certain level, we start producing air. And we're going to remedy these issues by pulling the tubing, installing a new pump all the way down at the horizontal section of the reservoir, which should give us much better flow rates. So it's important to note, this is all solvable, and it's certainly not a unique case. You know, in our experience, it's quite common for the great oolite in that area. Now, in the region, there are several fields producing from the great oolite, and just as we are from Litchi number 2, and many of them have taken a long time to bring into production for their full potential. You know, some of them have increased 2, 3, 4, even 5 times from their initial rates. So we firmly believe in our business case for Litchi number 2 and the Italian field, and it has a lot of upside potential still.
Yeah, yeah. And how has, if it has, how has your view of Litchi's potential contribution to your bottom line changed, you know, based on what you've seen so far, Paul?
Well, we're confident that Litchi has the ability to provide the company with significant cash flow. Even at, it's important to note, even at these rates, initial rates, this is commercial production. And I think some people have quickly forgotten, you know, we're a small, growing and nimble operation. The levels of production required from Litchi to make the company self-funded are actually quite low, you know, much lower than some of the assumptions that I've heard bandied about. Now, without putting too fine a point on it, we're talking about something in the very low 3 figures, actually lower than the CPR we gave when we IPO'd. So roughly around 150 barrels a day, that would cover all of our overheads.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So, I mean, if that's the case, will Litchi be a significant source of revenue for Angus, and how soon?
Yeah, well, first focus is optimizing the flow from the Great Oolite. That's the first of 3 potential reservoirs at Litchi. It's science, but it's also a bit of art. It takes time, it takes patience. And we're pursuing the best options for modification to our pump equipment and process. And based on our current work, there's no reason to believe that we cannot achieve a satisfactory outcome from Litchi number 2 and the entire field for our investors long term. So no one credible can say, you know, what the exact timing is, but we're looking at January, February period for that to happen. Now, our business model is simple. We look at existing assets and increase their value. And Litchi is not only proof of concept, as we have increased output and are producing commercially, but there's still a lot of remaining runway. We told our investors we would have cash flow this year, and we do. We are delivering. And, you know, we recognize that the beginning is slower and the numbers are not meeting sentiment, but it's still early days.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Can you explain there? You said there's plenty of runway at Litchi, and you said this is the first reservoir. So can you explain what that means, and why is a second and third reservoir significant for Angus?
Well, following our announcement of the initial flow rates, we received the third-party geochemical analysis that looked at the 2 additional potential reservoirs, the Kimmeridge and the Oxford layers. And before we drilled the Litchi number 2 well, we only gave that a very low chance of success. You know, Kimmeridge and Litchi, given its location on the southern edge of the Weald Basin. But when we got the geochem results back, it turns out that the maturity is actually very good. It's closely in line with Brockham and Horsehill. So we will shortly submit a field development plan addendum for Litchi to assess the potential of those 2 reservoirs.
Yeah. Okay. Well, you mentioned Horsehill and Bradford Bridge, which is a similar formation to Brockham, has reported previously disappointing results compared to Horsehill, the Gatwick Gusher, as it's known. Does this give you any pause here?
Well, no, it does not. You know, I'm not in a position to comment on another company's actual well, but, you know, they and us, we're all drilling for the same reservoir, which are the Kimmeridge layers in the Weald Basin. Please note that the Litchi number 2 well is not a Kimmeridge well. It's an old fashioned, you know, conventional limestone reservoir well, and the Kimmeridge layers is a new place. So Litchi number 2 is not related to what's happening at Brockham and at Bradford Bridge, but the Kimmeridge layers will put into production at Brockham. And the Kimmeridge is, by any professional standard, they're technically difficult to drill. And from what we've heard thus far from Bradford Bridge, is that they may have operational challenges, but not a formation problem. You know, the formation, they got the cores to surface, and it's naturally fractured, and the fractures were filled with hydrocarbons. So this got all the, you know, the indications that you can produce commercially from them without the need for fracking to produce good oil. So Angus Energy, we can drill these wells. We have drilled Horsehill, we drilled Brockham, we just drilled Litchi, and they all went through the Kimmeridge layers. Mm-hmm. Now, there's a reason why BP, you know, back in the day, you know, didn't look at the Kimmeridge as a producer, because
They're tricky. They're shales. So the moment you drill through them, you know, they start caving in. First of all, you don't want to use water-based mud, but even with old-based mud, when we drilled the Litsi 2 well recently, we had a change of just half a pound per gallon change in the mud weight while we were drilling through it. And immediately we got cave-ins. So we wanted to run our casing in afterwards, and we couldn't, you know. So we had to go back in, we had to clean the well up and run a new set of casing in. So whenever you drill through the Kimmeridge, it's tricky, you know. But we've proven that we can do that.
Okay, cool. And Angus now has cash flow and successfully completed the next round of funding. But the share price, Paul, has still declined. What do you think about the market? Is the market not valuing Angus correctly? What's happening here?
Yeah, exactly, Justin. The market is not correctly valuing Angus Energy. You know, that's the beauty of the markets. Currently, what we're seeing is a period dominated by negative sentiment, not on facts. I personally believe in investing in fundamentals and facts, not feelings. So we're disappointed with the initial flow rates, that they've not made the company self-sufficient from the start. You know, our assessments were thoughtfully prepared. We could have been, you know, clearer, you know, on timing from Litsi to satisfy our goal of self-funding. But we strongly believe this was a prudent analysis and component of our financial strategy, and it's in the best interest of our shareholders. You know, it's important to remember that becoming self-funded from Litsi was never based on the initial flows, you know, and this project was delivered on time and on budget. You know, we have a strong, well-financed, focused company that has future growth prospects, which will deliver value to shareholders purely on fundamentals, not on speculation. And I include myself in that as a shareholder, you know. The board and executive team are very clear about aligning shareholders' interests with the management interests.
Yeah, and of course, just talking about Brockham, do you think the market is currently pricing in Brockham or not?
Well, I'm not one to judge where the market is at any moment, but, you know, it's clear to us recent volatility is driven by initial rates reported from Litsi. And at the moment, we think the current share price is deeply discounted and fails to value our progress to date, our future growth, and the upside from the Kimmeridge at Brockham. Now, we expect Brockham to provide healthy additional revenue streams in the early part of 2018.
Okay. So what's next for Angus, Paul?
Well, as I said, we're focused on optimizing our yields from Litsi fields. We've received the third party report on the upside for the two additional reservoirs, which is really new information, and we never expected that, so that's quite significant. So we're working with all our regulators to bring the Kimmeridge and Oxford and potentially the Lias source rocks at Litsi into see what the potential there is from our existing two wells. To note, we don't have to drill a new well for that. And we're very pleased with progress to date at our field at Brockham and excited to put that into production. We need to put in a grid connection, but we expect to have that sorted by the end of Q1 and placing it into production then.
Okay, excellent stuff. Paul, well, if someone's listening to this and the answers you've given here and the story, how it's developing, but not yet following Angus on Vox Markets, give them three quick reasons why they should hit that follow button, please.
Well, I think for investors right now, the company is at the moment is undervalued. And second reason, in my personal opinion, the share price is simply cheap, you know, and we remain very excited about our prospects for 2018. We've got an active program and we're going to be very busy.
Excellent. Paul, good to chat to you, and hopefully we'll chat again in the not too distant future. Thanks very much.
Look forward to it, Justin. Thank you.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Stephen Chong, COO of MySquare. That's MYSQ ticker. Stephen, thanks for joining me.
Pleasure to be here, Justin.
Yeah, it's good to chat to someone from MySquare. We haven't had you on for a while, and he's an active investor base. I know that from social media. So it's good to get you guys on, and you've just had your results out. So we'll get into the detail of that. But for listeners who may not be as familiar with MySquare as me, and of course you, give us a brief introduction or summary as to what MySquare is all about, and then tell us a bit about your background, if you would, and how your background and your skills will benefit MySquare, please, Stephen.
Of course, thanks. MySquare is essentially a social media entertainment and payment solution company that develops mobile apps and games for the Myanmar market. As such, we incorporate Myanmar culture and language in everything we do, and we currently have over 20 million registered users. As for me, I've run operations in quite a number of diverse industry segments over the years. I've moved from automotive engineering to contract manufacturing to water and wastewater services and also to education services. These are all quite different industry segments. The common thread, I believe, I was hired to manage the challenges of rapid growth. With Hyflux and with Raffles Education, both of which are listed companies on the Singapore Stock Exchange, I was mainly involved with mergers and acquisitions. I helped both companies acquire as well as integrate the acquired operations. Both Raffles and Hyflux were pretty high growth companies. If you look at their market cap around 2003, Hyflux market cap was 460 million. And when I left around 2005, it was around 800 million. Raffles market cap was 400 million in 2005 and over a billion by 2009. Before that, I also helped JIT start up operations in Shanghai and Tianjin, Budapest and Guadalajara in Mexico. The team at JIT helped grow the company from being the 25th largest contract manufacturer in the world to the 15th largest contract manufacturer in over a three-year period. At one stage, we were growing 50% year on year, and the China operations team alone contributed around 20 million in sales. The total group revenue was over 100 million a year when I left at around 2001 after its merger with Flextronics. And before JIT, I worked in Vietnam with Singapore Technologies, where I started up an automotive workshop operation. So I do have some startup experience. More recently, I've also served on the board of some SMEs in Singapore and overseas, including one that operated data centers and provided managed and shared hosting services. Hosting is obviously one of the key components of cost for MySquare, and I hope to be able to contribute in this area. Also, as a portfolio advisor to a couple of PE and VC firms, I had the opportunity to be involved in helping startups in the fintech and app development space. So I hope the skills and experience acquired over the last 25 years or so, skills such as putting in place systems and processes, cost control, building and motivating teams, and putting in place a company culture that can attract and retain talent. Finally, before Singapore Technologies, I served in the Singapore Armed Forces as an officer in the Armoured Corps for 15 years. I earned an engineering degree from the Royal Military College, University of New South Wales at Duntroon, Australia, and was also a graduate of the Royal Military College of Science at Chivenham in the UK. I also have a master's degree in finance from City University in New York. My time in the military has given me an appreciation of the value of cohesive teams and allowed me to acquire leadership skills to create structure in an unstructured environment. These skill sets should serve me well when dealing with a frontier market like Myanmar, where one needs to be able to learn quickly and be adaptable. I hope these are the skills that would be put to good use in MySquare.
Okay, excellent, Stephen. So tell us, what areas of focus are your priority and, you know, what improvements would you like to make there?
Well, the top priority for MySquare would be to work towards profitability. As a group, revenue in financial year 2017, ending in June of 2017, was over $1.057 million. This is around 30% higher than it was in 2016. But we still need to work on growing this even faster. We need to execute. Mobile gaming under our MyGame brand is our most promising growth area. But we still need to grow this further. So we're in talks with potential partners from China and Japan with digital content. Anyone with games, video, collectibles, stuff that can be parlayed into merchandising opportunities. We have now published 5 hardcore games, 3 casual games, and 1 gaming platform with 6 mini games. And we will continue to increase our offering. The target is to publish another 3 to 4 games before the end of financial year 2018, ending in June of 2018. Our entertainment platform, Mingler Bar Morning, is also showing good product market fit and appears to be gaining traction. Since its launch about 4 months ago, Monthly active users have increased significantly, and we are encouraged by this progress. Nevertheless, we intend to increase the offerings on this platform. Currently, Minglabar Morning is essentially an entertainment news aggregator. You know, celebrity news, sports news, lifestyle, that kind of thing. We have integrated our chat product, MyChat, with Minglabar Morning. And now we intend to roll out new functionality, such as a dating app, posting of classifieds, music and video, and perhaps an auction or marketplace app. These products, we think, will increase user engagement. And with better engagement, we would be able to fire up the Minglabar Morning platform as a second engine of growth. And of course, we want to monetize this. We also intend to explore bundling of our content, games and social media, and offering it on Wi-Fi networks that are being built in Myanmar on their railways. You may be aware, we announced on our RNS an MOU with Myanmar Railways recently. Mm-hmm. Data in Myanmar is relatively expensive compared to the average income levels, and free Wi-Fi would go some way towards helping us acquire more users for both our gaming and mobile app platforms, and to increase the percentage of these active users into paying customers. Another priority of mine would be to build up our Myanmar team. Currently, we have a very good but relatively large fulfillment team that is based in Vietnam and a weaker marketing frontline team in Myanmar. We need to change this. We need more depth on the management bench in Myanmar. And as such, we're also seeking more local partnerships. We strongly believe that if we are to develop products that the market wants, we need to really understand the nuances in the Myanmar market that enable segmentation. Only with focus and segmentation can we hope to differentiate ourselves from competitors and command and preserve margins. If we only understand the market superficially, we will generate products and services that will be easily commoditized, and that is not the way we want to go.
Okay, I see. And so can you give us an update on your payments platform, please, Stephen?
Yes, the mobile money apps. As we continue to monetize our offerings, it is pretty important to keep growing the number of digital payment options we make available to our customers. We already have integrated billing systems with our telco partners, Telenor and Ooredoo. Now we need to turn our attention to launching mobile money apps, which we believe will facilitate our monetization efforts. Our development team has already been working on money mobile apps for third parties, so some of the expertise already resides in-house. However, we're not adverse to considering M&As either, especially if an appropriate opportunity comes our way. Time to market is everything in our business. If a potential partner is someone who wants to be part of a larger, high-growth listed entity like MySquare, that would just be perfect. Nevertheless, the key challenge to rolling out a digital wallet is not technical. We pretty much have something working with P2P money transfer and P2M online purchasing capability. The challenge is really regulatory. Finding the right compliance partner with an extensive cash-in, cash-out agent network would be key to the success or failure of this initiative. And of course, we are actively looking for the right partner. What we hope to bring to the table for any potential partner is a technical solution that is trustworthy, easy to use, and has access to an entertainment platform and marketplace that would encourage repeat transactions. And at some stage, we would also like to offer cross-border remittance functionality. We hope to be able to sort this out soon, and we'll of course update everyone on RNS at the appropriate time.
Excellent. Well, Stephen, you've got a lot going on there. You've got your work cut out, but it's nice to see you doing a lot in many different frontiers there. But for people listening to this right now and they like the sound of this, but they're not yet following you on Vox Markets, give them three reasons, quick reasons why they should hit that follow button on your page, please, Stephen.
Sure. First of all, we have first mover advantage. Number two, we have significant growth and product traction. And number three, we're marching on our way to profitability. How's that?
That's good. And Stephen, it's good to chat to you. And like you said, you've got a lot going on. So hopefully we'll chat again in the not too distant future. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Justin.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Russ Mould, Investment Director at Stockbroker AJ Bell. You all right, Russ?
I'm very well, Justin. How are you?
Good, thanks. Since we've last spoken, have you had any big winners on the horses in the GG since?
I had a 16-1 winner at Ascot last Saturday, actually, which was most pleasing. It was the outsider in a field of about 8 or 9, so that was quite satisfying intellectually as well as financially. So
yeah, that's good, isn't it? How did you pick that?
Well, it only run once this year, and it pulled up, so it actually hadn't got round all, but that was in a...
And that's what made you pick it.
I'm afraid. Well, I looked at that and thought, okay, so people will automatically know that because it's not a momentum stock. It's got a P next to its name.
Yeah.
So it didn't get round. So why? Okay, well, the ground was incredibly soft at Exeter. Doesn't like that. We can draw lines through that. What did it do last year? Well, it came third in the Queen Mother Champion Chase at Cheltenham, which is a grade one race. It ran incredibly well. It's dropped down about 3 grades in ratings in race today. This is a handicap. The favourite, I don't think, is going to win because it's too old. And so I'm not saying it's going to win, but at 16-1, it's completely overpriced.
Yeah, I
see. So that's what happened. So on its old form, it was the wrong price. Obviously, on this season's form, it looked terrible. I mean, it could have run terribly, but the ground was different. It was a much lower quality racer than it had been running in previously. So if it was on song, it was likely to be thereabouts, and it got home by half a length.
Wow, there we are. So I like the fact you just give him a chance. Yes, he didn't last time. He did have a good run. Give him a chance. I put a bit of money on him.
There you go. They're like humans. They're not machines. They have good days and they have bad days. So.
Yeah, okay. All right, so let's get on to stocks, Russ. What are we looking at?
So we're going to talk about Ramsden's, which is one that we've talked about a lot recently. They've had results this week. And I'm going to very quickly look at 3 construction materials and building-related companies, James Latham, Marlowe and Alamask.
Okay, go for it, Russ. Go for it.
So Ramsden's, RFX, AIM quoted, Middlesbrough headquartered provider of, I guess, ultimately pawnbroking and other financial services. Mm-hmm. Good interim results on the 27th of November. Pre-tax profits up a good 60-odd%, driven by the retail jewellery business, which I guess you would largely say is based on the pawnbroking, and also its foreign exchange services. One slight niggle, obviously, there is some exposure here to the gold price. We know that did for Albemarle and Bond appear when that overexpanded too quickly with some gold pop-up shops. Mm-hmm. But broker Liberum increased their earnings per share forecast a little bit for the next couple of years. So earnings momentum is positive. Deferring to you on the chart, that looks okay to me. Mm-hmm. It's on a PE of just under 12, which means it's now bang in line with its remaining quoted sector peer, H&T. There's a little bit of a yield in there as well, I think, from memory. And we first looked at this a few months ago. It's gone from 140p to 180p since. Yeah. But to me, it feels like it's still got the wind in its sails. And given that, as we know, you know, we've just been talking before we started this talking about the wretched situation at RBS this morning with the branch closures and some people potentially losing their jobs.
Yeah.
We know that life's tough out there for a lot of consumers. And unfortunately, I fear that, you know, the services that pawnbrokers provide could prove pretty useful under those circumstances. So it feels like right stock, decent valuation, right time, and still some momentum behind it.
Yeah, it'd be interesting. I mean, obviously, with technical analysis, sometimes, you know, I think the more simple you can make it, the better. But it's a lovely trend going up there, and but you see, it's got the 200, almost close to £2, to, you know, 200 pennies there, and it's had a bit of a stall. We'll see if it breaks through that. Of course, that's one of those points.
Yeah.
It's resistance, but it comes support if it breaks through it. Yeah. So we'll see.
It's had a good run. I mean, it may be due for a pause for breath, but it feels like it's still a pretty solid company.
Yeah, marvellous. Okay, what's next, Russ?
So I want to talk about 3 construction material / building stocks, James Latham, Marlowe and Alamask. We've talked about them all before, and I just want to flag up all of them because their share prices are just looking a little bit sorry for themselves, which is very much in keeping with the construction material sector overall. On a FTSE All Share level, it's now ranked about 32nd out of 39 this year and has been losing ground. CRH is kind of the big proxy for the sector, the FTSE 100 stock. Its share price has been looking pretty sorry for itself. And on a pan-European basis, the sector's not doing that well. Assa Abloy, Finnish quoted, big maker of locks and so on. That's had a disappointing trading statement. So it's just a flag that I know there's lots of enthusiasm about building and so on and what the government's plans are for house building, but it doesn't seem to be working that well, right? It doesn't seem to be inspiring these stocks, which when the government's throwing everything it can at it, I think is in itself the market saying, maybe a lot of this good news is already priced in. Now, James Latham had interims yesterday, and you know they were okay, sales were up 7, but gross margin was down. Pre-tax profit was down 12, earnings per share was down 11. And basically because they've seen, obviously, the pound go down, so that's given them some cost pressure. But they've also seen cost price pressure from manufacturers, and they've not been able to pass on those price increases to their customers. And as we all know, companies that have got pricing power are great investments. Companies that don't have pricing power can be very, very tricky ones. So Latham kept its dividend unchanged. Dividends well covered, 6 times covered, no problem at all. The yield's about 1.5%, so it's not going to get too many people stoked up there. And it is on a PE of about 17 after a very good run. So I just think that, again, when companies start talking about not being able to pass on cost pressure, I think it's something that you need to be aware of. And although they are talking about margins being better in the second half, the stock did come off a little bit. And I think now it's gone up since we first flagged it. I'd be inclined to perhaps, lock in something there, move on and take another look. And I think the same applies to Marlowe and Alomask as well. Marlowe's come down a little bit from its peak, but it's still higher than, it's still at 350p, well above where we first looked at it, just around the £3 level. We know it's an acquisitive company. It's operating in some interesting areas. The budget put great emphasis on fire safety and water safety with Chancellor Hammond just a couple of weeks ago. But again, you've got a company with 120 million market cap, profits of sales of 70 odd, but profits of 5 as it builds out. So again, there's not a lot of margin for safety there if anything goes wrong. And Alomask is the cheapest of the three by miles. It's on a PE of 8 with a yield of 4.5. So I think if you feel that yield is safe and the balance sheet's okay, so touch wood, that will give you some downside protection. But the AGM statement on the 26th of October read a bit guarded to me. We had the old chestnut in there of a second half weighted year. Some people will feel happy with that. Think, yeah, well, I'm a long-term investor. I can tough it out. It's a cheap stock. It's well run. I like the strategy. Anybody with a more nervous disposition will think, yeah, I've seen this script, seen this film before. Yeah. And second half weighted years tend to become actually next year weighted years. Mm-hmm. I mean, so that like-for-like sales up 4% against a flat market, I think is a great justification of the strategy they've got of focusing on niche areas like solar and water control. But outperforming a market that's disappointing isn't necessarily a recipe for share price success. So again, I think this one has actually just gone a little bit below where we first looked at it. Again, just feeling nervous right now about the way the whole sector's performing. It hasn't been inspired by what should be seen as good news with the government trying to stick its oar in and get volumes going. I'd just be inclined to step back, let these see what happens and maybe come back another time.
Excellent stuff. Russ, have a nice weekend, fella. And any crazy plans for the weekend?
We got Christmas tree buying, I'd imagine, will be quite prominent on the list if the kids have got anything to do with it. And we got some friends coming around for lunch on Sunday. So that's about the extent of the weekend's endeavours, I think.
Marvellous. Well, do you know what? Yeah, me and the other half, they're going to... Where are we going? I think we're in your neck of the woods, actually. We're at Brighton with another couple. No. And we're going to see, going to a club, something to eat, and we're staying over for the night. So, and the kids, I don't know where the kids are, to be honest. They'll be okay in the house.
Sure they'll be in safe hands.
Yeah. But by the way, we had our tree up last week. That's how crazy they are, the kids.
Oh,
there,
so my God. Well, it'll be dead by Christmas Day, won't it? It'll be dried, shriveled twig by Christmas Day.
Well, we've had it 4 years, so it should be okay.
Christ,
it's a fake one.
Oh, okay, fair enough. So that doesn't require... That doesn't have too much problem at all.
No. There we are. The first 2 years we had it, our youngest pulled it over twice.
Funny that.
Christmas on, with all smashing all the stuff and the baubles on it. But it's the first time last year he hadn't pulled the tree over. Anyway, Russ, thanks for that. Have a nice weekend.
Pleasure. Take care.
Okay, it's time for the top 5 most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours. They are at 5, Sirica Energy, SQZ. At 4, Valrix, that's VAL. At 3, a flyer today. I did buy some of these. I was going to write a blog about them on the weekend, but they've flown too fast. Tertiary Minerals, but still, I think, potentially a lot of upside there, judging by the resource they have. That's TYM, up 200% today at one point. At 2, Pathfinder Minerals, PFP. And number 1 most followed company was Physiomics, PYC. That's it for the podcast. Thanks for listening. Muchos apreciados.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
The Financial Times guides you through complex issues. In divisive times, don't settle for black and white. When you need the full perspective, turn to ft.com. Become a subscriber today. Search for FT Subscription.